answers. Rosie and William had spent the last 40 minutes in William's den, having the same conversation over and over.
"We shouldn't go," Rosie would say. "I already understand why you hate her, and I know what's going to happen. He's going to transform and bite somebody, and then he feels guilty, and on top of what happened with his friends, he just shuts himself up for 10 years. And it was all Elizabeth's fault, and that's why you hated her."
"We don't have to go," William would reply patiently. "I'll just tell you what happened."
"No, no, we should go. We don't want to tell it. Anyway, I want to see who's going to turn out to be the werewolf."
"No, you don't."
"Then we shouldn't go. I already understand why you hate her, and I know what's going
to
happen."
"We don't have to go."
"No, no, we should go."
Finally, the rake zzzed over to the couch they were sitting on, did a couple of sideways leaps in the air, and stood on its head, or handle in this case. Rosie looked questioningly at William for translation.
"He says if you don't bloody well make up your mind, he's going to kill himself with a leaf blower."
"You got that out of a few jumps and a headstand?"
"Yeah, well, we've been at this for a long time."
All right, let's just go before I lose my nerve."
Besides, Rosie thought to herself, Quentin had told her he wanted to know, and no way would she let him know she'd chickened out. She grabbed William's hand with her defiant look, and he sighed.
"Okay, but if it's too much and you want to come back, just say back, and we'll get out of there right away."
"You've told me that 3 times. Let's go."
August 15th, 1985, Fenchurch Manor, London.
Rosie and William appeared in the kitchen again, apparently just in time for lunch. Richard was consuming an enormous lettuce and tomato sandwich, while Lady Fanshawe rolled her eyes at him and cut up William's meal.
"Don't remember this part,"
William mused and glanced nervously at the large round wall clock, which read 12:15. It seemed to be, Rosie thought, the longest-lasting lunch in history. But finally Richard yawned, stretched, and announced he was going upstairs for his afternoon nap.
"That's why he doesn't know anything about it," she hissed to William. "Nothing wakes him up from his nap."
William did not reply. He had started frowning. Apparently they were getting to the part he remembered.
"Time for you to nap too, Wills. After a nap, we'll read a story,"
Lady Fanshawe announced cheerily about 10 minutes later and strode up the stairs, carrying him in her arms. William and Rosie followed behind, with William looking paler at every step, and Rosie clutched his hand reassuringly.
"You can decide if you want us to go back too, you know,"
she whispered worriedly.
No, I think maybe if I see it, I'll quit having nightmares about it. You know, face up to your fears and all that,"
William recited in a rather mechanical voice.
"Just get ready," he told her warningly. "At the top of the stairs."
Since they were behind Lady Fanshawe's wide, bustled behind, they could not see anything when she reached the top, and Rosie jumped when her grandmother emitted a blood-curdling scream.
"Run through her!"
William shouted, and Rosie plunged after him, feeling as if she'd plummeted right through a wall of terror. And there, pacing angrily around the living room, was the wolf. Although she had certainly expected to see this, the sight was still quite frightening. She did not like large dogs or wolves, and this was an especially large and ferocious-looking wolf with glittering gold eyes and huge fangs.
"Mother, what on earth?"
Elizabeth and Solange came running down the hall, skidded to a stop, and almost toppled over one another. Lady Fanshawe stood frozen at the top of the steps, William still clutched tightly in her arms.
"Richard! Victor!"
All three of the women shrieked at once, and William began to cry.
"Scary! Scary!"
he screamed and pointed wildly at the wolf, now growling throatily and ripping through the plush velvet sofa with its teeth. Victor staggered down the hall with his hair sticking out in all directions, apparently just out of bed, but his hangover was clearly cured immediately.
"Oh, Mary, Mother of God!"
he shouted and sprinted in front of Elizabeth and Solange.
"Get back there! Get back! Caroline, take him downstairs!"
Rosie was rather impressed with this unexpected show of bravery on Victor's part, but none of the women seemed able or willing to move.
"I put those silver bullets in the rifle!"
Elizabeth shrieked and burst into tears.
"Can't do it! Can't shoot me, a bloody uncle!"
Victor muttered as he stared at the wolf in a horrified fashion.
"He'll go after William! You know they're like children!"
Elizabeth sobbed.
"He'll kill himself if he hurts William! You know he will!"
William, who apparently had understood enough to know the creature might come after him, let out a great shriek of fright.
"Get away, you nasty creature!"
Lady Fanshawe screeched defiantly and flung one of her bird-bedecked hats at him.
"Close your eyes!"
William yelled as he sat down on the sofa, his face a ghastly grayish color. Rosie sat herself quickly down and reached for his arm reassuringly. Now that it was actually happening, it didn't seem quite real, and her innate bravery had kicked in. "Let's just get it over with then," she told herself. Just like on New Year's, several things seemed to happen at the same time. The wolf sprang towards Lady Fanshawe and William, appearing almost 7 feet tall, stretched out and leaping through the air. Lady Fanshawe flung William towards Victor, who made a great lunge and caught him, and Elizabeth ran for the rifle. The wolf snapped its jaws savagely onto Caroline's arm and began dragging her back and forth across the floor while Elizabeth fired a shot wildly into the air. Distracted, the animal dropped Lady Fanshawe and began walking purposefully towards Elizabeth, who held the rifle in shaking hands and let the wolf keep coming closer.
Mother!
Solange rushed over to Caroline, who lay sprawled on the floor, blood gushing from a nasty bite in her upper arm. Three loud bangs exploded around the room. For a moment, Rosie thought the rifle had gone off, and three familiar figures appeared instantaneously. The first was Dumbledore, in his purple flowing robes and half-moon spectacles, his kind old face etched with worry and concern. The second was Arthur Weasley, with thicker hair, and the third, with his familiar malevolent expression and billowing black cape, was Severus Snape.
Wingardium Leviosa!
Dumbledore shouted as the wolf leapt at Victor. Victor and William both went sailing up to the top of the 15-foot ceiling, where they floated about, helpless but quite safe.
Now you know I'm afraid of heights, William muttered. I told you this was going to happen, shouted Snape wrathfully. Pacificus Totalus!
He snapped his wand, and the wolf froze like an awkward stuffed animal, and toppled over onto its side. Arthur pulled some silver cord from the pocket of his robes and quickly began binding it up.
Arthur, take this lady to St. Mungo's immediately. She's been bitten, Dumbledore snapped out sternly. Severus, get Remus to the Shrieking Shack and I'll meet you there. I'll obliviate their memories.
Arthur scooped up Lady Fanshawe and disapparated with a loud crack.
Well, headmaster, Snape drawled out in his infamously sardonic manner. Doesn't seem your harmless star prefect took the necessary precautions this month. I'm quite sure there's a good explanation, Dumbledore replied calmly. To the shack, Severus, if you please, he intoned in a voice that made it clear this was not actually a request. Certainly, Snape replied silkily and hoisted the wolf up over his shoulders. Picnic time's over, old fellow. Pity she didn't shoot you.
That is quite enough, Dumbledore shouted, and Snape, with a sullen expression, promptly disapparated with Lupin.
Oblivio!
Dumbledore roared at Elizabeth and Solange before disappearing in a flash of blue light.
He forgot you and Victor. Up on the ceiling,
Rosie whispered furiously.
It'll be back, William muttered.
There was another crack, and Dumbledore reappeared.
Great galloping midgets, he said crossly. At least Severus wasn't here. Never hear the end of it. Sorry, mobile corpus.
Victor and William dropped straight from ceiling to floor. Fortunately for William, Victor landed on the carpet first.
Oblivio!
Dumbledore yelled at Victor and William and disappeared again, this time apparently for good. Elizabeth fell over in a dead faint. Solange ran in the kitchen and threw up in the sink, and Victor sat up and looked around with a dazed expression. Whether from being dropped 15 feet or what he'd just seen, Rosie wasn't quite sure. William began wailing loudly.
I don't get it!
Rosie looked wildly at William.
He obliviated everybody! Why do you all remember?
I don't know, William replied honestly. Really, I don't. But now you know everything.
A few minutes later, the two of them were sitting in Lupin's study, firing questions at him while he supplied the requisite chocolate and butter beer.
Why couldn't I get through the door the day before?
Rosie demanded.
A time traveler, that is, can't break the spell,
he replied calmly.
Why didn't Dumbledore's charm work?
William blurted out.
Can't obliviate a muggle's memory of anything that happens inside their own home on the day of a full moon.
He didn't know this? Both of them burst out together.
He knew it afterward, Lupin sighed. Dumbledore was a great wizard, you know. He wasn't God.
How did he and Snape and Arthur Weasley get there?
Lupin sighed again.
I kept trying to disapparate the day before and couldn't. My concentration was off from the draught, I guess, but I sent him a howler, only I brilliantly forgot to mention where I was. Anyway, they knew I'd gone to visit Victor, so Arthur searched some Muggle records to find out who he was married to, and well, then they looked up the address in the telephone book, he added sheepishly. That's what took them so long to get there.
After all the tension, or perhaps the butterbeer, William and Rosie burst out laughing. The image of Arthur Weasley, Dumbledore, and Snape in dress robes with wands frantically perusing the London phone book was just a bit much. Rosie stopped laughing and gave him a long look.
But you bit my grandmother.
Lupin stopped smiling.
Yes,
he replied very quietly.
But she's a werewolf. I mean, she's here every full moon.
William and his uncle exchanged a glance.
You've heard of metamorph magi, Rosie?
Lupin asked hesitantly.
Well, obviously, Tonx was one, she replied determinedly. Right, anyway, when it's full moon, your grandmother's taken to St. Mungo's and given Morphsbane, where she can transform safely and be attended to, and a metamorphagus takes her place that day.
I don't believe this, Rosie burst out angrily. This is horrible, and it's all Elizabeth's fault. She...
Lupin looked at her intently.
She was very young, and it was an impulsive mistake. She didn't really believe the werewolf business, and she was upset with me. Fault's mostly mine, really. I should have told her before.
Why should you have told her?
Rosie blurted out crossly.
And what was she upset with you? William said furiously. You never did anything to her.
Well, that's another long story, Lupin said with finality. And it doesn't really matter why, if you trust my word, William.
Well, of course I trust your word, William replied solemnly. Well, just don't see why...
Trust, Lupin replied after a moment's silence, implies unanswered questions.
A rather awkward silence followed.
Anyway, Lupin obviously wanted to change the subject. As you see, there was another very good reason Severus didn't want me teaching at Hogwarts, one Ginny didn't know about and why he felt I was dangerous. He didn't think much of my story that a muggle woman had poisoned me with some draught.
Rosie tried to take all this information in.
But doesn't my grandfather know there's some other person pretending to be his wife once a month?
Well, we are talking about Richard here, Lupin replied dryly.
I guess they do a good job of it, Rosie said thoughtfully. I mean, I've never noticed.
Richard's too worn out and cheerful on full moon day to worry about much of anything,
Lupin replied sardonically and took a swig of butterbeer. Rosie was puzzled by this statement, but only for a moment.
Ew, that is the grossest! Oh, I'm going to be sick!
Really, you ought to thank me, Lupin said amiably. And haven't you noticed times when your oh-so-proper grandmother acts a bit out of character?
Rosie thought of Lady Fanshawe screaming, Yankees suck! As she raced onto Wrigley Field and dumping red food coloring onto Richard's hair.
Yeah, she grinned. I guess you're right.
Watch when she does it, and you'll notice just a few days before full moon makes one quite mischievous and stupid. James and Sirius thought I was a good deal more fun then,
he added wryly.
Wow,
Rosie said in a stunned voice.
Well, I honestly wouldn't ever have guessed this. Well, a million years.
William looked at Lupin.
Has Caroline brought this up?
Not really. I try to make sure we're never alone, and, well, I think she pretends to herself it never actually happened. It certainly isn't something she wants known, probably even to herself. I talked to her afterwards, obviously, when she was at St. Mungo's. Not that one can properly apologize for something like that.
He winced.
So how did Dumbledore convince you to go back to Hogwarts and teach?
Rosie demanded as she stood up.
Well, told me Harry was there, and his suspicions about Harry's future, that he was going to need to be able to defend himself.
He smiled.
And then he told me to give up the pity party and show some marauder spirit and help James's son.
Boy, he got all of you with that kind of thing, didn't he? Snape,
Professor Snape,
Lupin corrected her amiably.
Severus deserved a lot more respect than he ever got.
So do you, Rosie replied determinedly. And I'm totally knackered. I'm going to have a lie down.
Lupin and William watched her leave.
There's the girl for you, William,
Lupin told him cheerfully. William smiled back at him.